Welcome back to Human Emotion. Today we're going to talk about stress. So this is something that's probably familiar to all of us and something that we wish we could reduce in our daily lives. So what is stress? In what way does it affect our emotional health, and how can we try to reduce it? So here we'll be moving into our second component, looking at emotion and health, talking about stress today. And here we'll try to think about the question of, in what sense are you stressed out and more emotional? Or in what way does stress actually affect our emotional health? So we're going to do it this way. We're going to start talking about stress. Then we're going to move on to disease, which is vitally related to the amount of stress we experience in our everyday lives. Then we'll conclude with our takeaway questions and expert interview. So let's start with stress. Again, something that's so familiar to many of us and that we all wish we could actively reduce. Let's try to understand it better. So I want to first start out by defining, well, what is stress? So stress has been defined as the degree to which people have to change and readjust their lives in response to an external event. And often the idea here is that the amount in which people need to change and readjust often exceeds the resources that they currently have at hand, that they feel that they don't have the capacity or regulatory strategies in place to be able to overcome or surmount the demands placed upon them. So what causes stress? Now this is something that's really important. Most of us think of a lot of negative events as the kinds of main triggers of stress. But what's important to realize here is that both, quote, good and bad things can cause significant stress. So it not only, you know, is funerals, which we often associate with stress, or the loss of a loved one, but even weddings and graduation. These are what we think of as typically good events, but that also can cause and engender tremendous amounts of stress as well. So many different kinds of events can make us feel stress and elicit stress in us. What about the emotional effects of stress? So it's interesting here. So when people are motivated to perform well, the way your body responds to the stressor can either improve or inhibit your performance, right? So stress actually helps you perform better when you view the particular situation as a challenge, right? However, if you view the particular situation as a threat, then it actually, stress will inhibit your performance. So you might think about a time that you had to speak in front of an audience, right? So if you're viewing the situation as a threatening, scary type of scenario, the amount of stress you're feeling will actually get in the way of your ability to make that speech. However, if you approach the stressor as a type of challenge that you're going to surmount, the stress will actually help you approach and even overcome that particular event or obstacle. Interestingly here, we see very different types, as you're going to see, physiological patterns that correspond to whether you approach a stressor as a challenge or a threat. So we see in both cases here that you see increased heart rate, whether you're approaching it as a challenge or a threat. However, we start to see differences when we get to other types of physiological patterns. So when you think of a challenge, you see increase in the strength of heart contraction, whereas in a situation of threat, you see almost mild or no increase. You see increased cardiac output in a challenge, so circulating more blood into your torso, kind of mobilizing your body, and decreased cardiac output in the context of a threat. For a challenge, you see increased diameter of circulatory vessels. Threat, you see decrease. So what's happening is when you're approaching it as a challenge, your body's really mobilizing you to help you overcome and surmount whatever sorts of physiological demands are needed on the body, where it seems as a threat, you're almost withdrawing and not mobilizing your body to surmount that particular stressor. When it comes to performance implications, this is really interesting. So a challenge is associated with increased blood flow to the brain, whereas a threat, decrease. Challenge, again, increased blood to effector muscles, threat, decrease. And again, as we've talked about, you see approaching stressors as a challenge, you see increased cognitive and physical performance, whereas approaching a stressor as a potential threat, decrease. So all in all, what's really interesting here is we see a whole different cascade of emotional, physiological, and cognitive effects when stressors are perceived as challenges versus when they're perceived as threats. So in other words, it's the saying of what you expect is what you get. So it all comes down to how you appraise the situation, whether you see it as a challenge or a threat, right? And so if you perceive that your personal resources are exceeding the situational demands, so that you have enough personal resources to overcome the situation, you'll perceive it or appraise it as a challenge. Whereas by contrast, if you appraise your personal resources as being less than what the situational demands require, you'll perceive it as a threat. So, a really interesting experimental study looking at the emotional effects of stress was done in 1997 by Tamaka and colleagues. And in this study, they had participants come into the lab and complete a verbal math task. And before the task, they asked participants, "How well do you think you can cope with the upcoming task?" And, "How threatening is the upcoming task?" And then they divided participants into two groups: challenge appraisals and threat appraisals. So challenge appraisals were those who rated the first question higher than the second, and threat appraisals were those who rated the second question higher than the first. So the threat appraisals rated the task as more threatening compared to how well they thought they could cope, and the challenge appraisal was the opposite. So they rated themselves as being able to cope at a higher degree than what they rated the potential threat of the upcoming task. What they found in this task is a really fascinating series of results here. So this is looking at cardiac output divided by cognitive appraisals. So the appraisal group was either challenge or threat. And again, what you're seeing here is increased cardiac output when they perceive the upcoming challenge, so that verbal math task, as a challenge as opposed to a threat. So again, here what we're seeing is a greater change in the liters of blood per minute when we look at cardiac impedance measures in the challenge and threat. So even just answering these questions, you see that in a laboratory setting, you can experimentally induce challenging versus threat appraisals, and that this actually changes our own physiology and how our body mobilizes to respond to this upcoming challenge or stressor. And here you can actually see not only is there changes in the physiological responding of these two groups, but there's actually changes when you look at their own performance. So here, if you look on the left at the number of answers that were generated in this verbal math task, our challenge group in white generated significantly greater number of answers than the threat group in gray, and had a significantly higher number of correct subtractions than the threat group as well. So their body's mobilizing, and as a result, they're actually performing better cognitively on this task when they're in the challenge as opposed to threat appraisal group. Now let's turn to a different question of looking at emotional stress and physical immunity. So we know here that psychological stress decreases your immune system functioning and making it more susceptible to disease. So we can all remember times that we felt very stressed out, and it just so happened during that time that we were probably more likely to catch the common cold or a flu or a host of other physical ailments. So we know that there's some link between emotional stress and how well our body's able to defend against different sort of, toxins in the environment. What do we know in terms of affective science? What does it have to say about this relationship? So here was a really interesting study done by Cohen and colleagues that they called the Hotel Study. In the Hotel Study, they recruited approximately 420 healthy adults who were invited to stay a week in a hotel. During this week, they completed measures of life stress, and they were exposed to a common cold virus through a nasal spray. And they were monitored for 7 days after the nasal spray exposure. What they found here, really interestingly, is if you look at the percent of participants who got sick, right? So this is on the left-hand side here, from 70% up to 95%, and you looked at sort of where they ranked in terms of the amount of stress that they reported. They were in the lowest quartile, low middle, high middle, and highest quartile. What you see here is an almost linear relationship whereby those who are in the highest quartile of stress actually had a greater percentage of people who got sick, as opposed to those who are in the lowest quartile, who had the lowest percent of people who got sick. So the more that we're self-reporting stress, you can see here, the more likely we are to actually get sick when exposed to a common cold virus. So we have decreased physical immunity as our emotional stress increases. So interestingly, we're talking about transient stressors for the most part up to this point. If we think about chronic stress, so this is the kind of stress many people report. So it's a kind of stress you experience most of the day, day after day. We call this chronic stress. And importantly, beyond just the common cold, we see chronic stress predicts increases in hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and a more chronically weakened immune system. So it's not only that emotional stress leaves us more vulnerable to catching colds or maybe reporting that we're getting the flu, but it can actually cause and predict various forms of very critical types of physical ailments. So is stress all bad then? Or can we actually see a lighter side of stress? So why would we be built with this capacity to experience stress if all it does for us is causes us all types of emotional difficulties and leaves us more susceptible and physically immune or lack of immunity to ailments? Can there be what I think of as a lighter side of stress? Can there be some adaptive function for us if experienced in moderation? So here, if we think of the lighter side of stress, we can see that sometimes stress actually leads to thriving. So there's two aspects of positive stress here. So we can see that acute stressors instead of chronic actually help mobilize you to engage and approach an upcoming task. Maybe you're running a marathon and you need that kind of acute stress to mobilize you to get through the task. And what's really important too is that when you have acute stressors, you want to have periods of complete relaxation in between the stressors. So having isolated bouts of stress seems to help sometimes promote thriving or goal achievement, as opposed to more chronic and unrelenting stress, which really weakens the immune system and weakens emotional strength, increasing emotional ability. Interestingly too, if you look at some studies that were done of this lighter side of stress, you had Eppel and colleagues who compared to no stress or chronic stress, these kind of intermittent stressors. So these are the stressors kind of come, relax, come, relax. So these are the sort of scattered types of acute stressors, what they call intermittent stressors, that those who experienced these kinds of stressors compared to no stress or chronic stress actually were more effective, as you can see, coping with subsequent stressors, had a healthier immune system, and actually had a longer cell life. So what this suggests is you don't want to have no stress in your life, you want to have some, but you also don't want that stress to be chronic and unrelenting. You want what just you can think of as a sort of perfect balance of stress. Having intermittent stressors, but that when the stressor ends, it ends, right? And it doesn't extend for infinite amounts of time. So intermittent stressors seem to be the real secret of this lighter side of stress that can actually help us cope with challenges in the environment and build our physical immunity. So we've talked about stress, and now we'll move on to disease. So what I want to start with is the relationship between anger as a really critical emotion and its association with physical disease. So in what way can anger actually leave us more vulnerable to physical disease? So this is some work that was done by a really interesting group of researchers that asked the question, does harboring hostility hurt? And here they looked at associations between hostility and pulmonary function in the coronary artery risk development in young adults, or CARDIA study. What they found is that they took a cross-sectional relationship looking at associations between pulmonary function in the heart and anger, and they did this across a large study sample. So this is 4,629 participants. And what they found here, what results suggested, is that those high in hostility also showed an increased risk for forced expiratory volume, right, as well as decreased forced vital capacity. So these are both really two important indices that are associated with decreased pulmonary functioning. So what this suggests is that anger or hostility actually leads to decreased pulmonary functioning. So we actually see anger associated with, we can think of disease in terms of decreased sort of typical cardiac functioning in terms of pulmonary function. If you're interested more in looking at the relationship between anger and disease, there's a really interesting study you can read here as well that looks at the relationship between anger and lung function as well, showing similar types of results, right? That anger or hostility is associated with decreased lung functioning as well as pulmonary functioning in our earlier study. And now I'll turn to looking at positive emotion in physical disease. So we looked at anger as a negative emotion, showing that it shows detrimental or deleterious effects on physical health. What about positive emotion? How does it show associations with physical disease and health? So here, this is work by Laura Kubansky and colleagues, where they looked at positive emotion and health. They said going beyond the negative. In their study, what they found is they looked at the relationships between positive emotion and health. And in particular, they focused on two emotions, hope and curiosity, and extracted medical data over a two-year period from over 1,000 patient records. And what you'll see, and we'll look at this in one second here, what they found is that when they looked at the relationship between positive emotion and health over a two-year period and over 1,000 patient records, what they found is that when people who reported hope and curiosity, so they had them self-report these using questionnaire measures, is that they found is that hope was associated with a decreased likelihood of developing physical disease, and curiosity was associated with a decreased likelihood of developing diabetes specifically. So what this suggests, really, really innovative work, is that positive emotion may actually play a protective factor in the development of disease. And in particular, it looks like hope and curiosity. So these are positive emotions that are really focused on future outcomes, and having a positive valence attitude towards them may be especially important in buffering against the onset or exacerbation of a variety of different kinds of physical maladies. So we've talked about stress and we've talked about disease and the way that emotion plays a vital role in relating to both. So what I want to turn now to are our takeaway questions for today relating to emotion and health. The first question asks, what are some of the emotional effects of stress and how can emotional stress affect physical immunity? Second, what are some of the more adaptive effects of stress? So can there be a lighter side of stress? And finally, how do anger and positive emotion differentially influence physical disease processes and severity? So now we'll turn to our expert interview for today as part of our Experts in Emotion interview series. Today, for our Experts in Emotion interview, we'll be speaking with Dr. Judith Moskowitz on emotion and physical health. Dr. Moskowitz is an associate professor in residence in the Department of Medicine and the Osher Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. She received her PhD in social psychology from Dartmouth College and her MPH in epidemiology from UC Berkeley. Her research is focused on coping and emotion in the context of chronic stress. In particular, she studies the impact of positive emotion on psychological and physical adjustment to serious stress and illness. Using both quantitative and qualitative methodologies, she examines how caregivers and those with chronic illness appraise and cope with the illness-related stress and how those processes are related to well-being. Dr. Moskowitz is the PI of an NIH-funded randomized controlled trial of an intervention designed to increase positive affect during a stressful health-related event, such as testing positive for HIV. She's modifying the positive affect intervention for high school and middle school students, people with type 2 diabetes, women with stage 4 breast cancer, and university employees, and testing in-person and online approaches to delivering the intervention. So I now turn to a very special Experts in Emotion interview together with Dr. Judith Moskowitz on emotion and physical health.